So, like usually before Yontif, we try to learn something inside from somebody who will help us feel, experience the Yontif. I think this might be the first time I've used a piece from Rav Volba. I don't know, but I just always like to spend 2-3 minutes talking about the person. Rav Volba was somebody I was zocheh to hear many times. He was born in Germany in the early 1900s. He was born to actually not from parents. I think his father might have been Reform, if not mistaken. His mother's more traditional. He didn't have much of a Jewish education. Somehow, he ended up in the Mir Yeshiva. I guess there had been some prepping and prior, learning of sorts. Mir was at that time Bess Yeshiva. And he came there about 1933. He became extremely attracted. He had already finished university at the time. He became extremely attracted to Rabbi Rucham, Mashgiach Remir, and a profound Musa thinker. And it really changed his life. That meeting and those 2 years, he was able to absorb a tremendous amount of insight. Rabbi Rucham passed away in 1935, and he stayed on a few more years. He had a very interesting life. He ended up in Sweden during the war years, and there was a school there. There was sort of a refugee camp for Frum girls. He then went to Eretz Yisrael after the war, and he had a yeshiva in Ber Yaakov for many years. He then moved to Yerushalayim, and many yeshivas took him to give Musa Shmuzen. He was an extraordinarily gifted Musa person. He had very deep insights on people, on human nature, a very structured way of thinking. To listen to him, you could sit and hear. He would spread out an entire canvas of ideas with Chazal, and wrote Sfarim. Two of them became very famous, Alei Shur, two volumes. They're very, very widely accepted in yeshivas. And he also spoke a lot, which they later collected and published posthumously. He used to speak in his yeshiva from Elul until after Yom Kippur. He would speak many times, but it was a series where pieces would build on each other, and every year there would be a different theme that he built and explained how to make use of it, how to grow from it. It was quite unique in that he was able to take quite deep ideas and also explain to people how they could make use of it. There was always a very, very, it was very useful. It was something you could actually implement. Very, very extraordinary. This sefer is taken from one of those books they collected. It's called Das Shlomo, Kuntris Yimei Haratzon, which deals with Elul, Tishrei, Shmuzen, that he said for, I think, 10 years worth of it and so on. We're going to do two pieces, which, like I said before, they stagger on each other. We're going to do part of the first and then the second one. As usual, the copying machine, or the person doing the copying, which was myself, made a mistake. And the second side is not really the second side. The second side should be disregarded. It should follow the third side and the fourth side. But, okay, that's Maimer Rishon Ischachus. So the point he's going to start with, is the base is going to be about the almost conflicting concept of sameness and renewal that seems to be rooted in many ruchnistike aspects. Tfus abriya kaim ze alfei shanim. The world as we know it has been there for thousands of years. Avot tfuse hu gam chidush tmidi. On the one hand, we have a very clear dating system. On a ksuba, on a get, we write a date of how many thousands of years the world is standing. But we say every day that Balzer Omer Mechadish Betuva Choyim Tavid Masiv Reishis Shekol Yom Yisparach Mechadish Olomo. We proclaim every morning that Kadosh Baruch Hu renews the world. So there's a sense of the world being continuous, and there's a sense of the world constantly renewing itself. Chadoshim lipkoim rabba munasecha. Hatfus ha'atik v'chidush ha'tmidi. The sense of continuity, the old format, and the constant renewal, heinein matkonis habriya, that is every aspect of creation carries both those traits. We don't have to look further than ourselves. Not one of our cells in the body is the same as a few months ago, and yet we are the same person. Imagine if we would have a car that we would exchange every single part once a year, it would always, we'd assume it to be a totally new car. There wouldn't be anything left of the old car. And yet we are the old person. We bear the impressions and everything. So in a person itself, you see the two. Kenu, the next paragraph, in the Torah. Tfus ha-Torah. And so on. One of the fundamentals of our faith is that the Torah as we have it is exactly as we got it from Sinai. Let me add, even the halachas that the Rabbanin added, so to speak, they were already latent in the sense that the Torah said the rabbis can and ought to enact certain halachas. But the basic Torah, we believe that there is no change and we're not allowed to change anything. That's a fundamental of faith. And yet, Umeidoch, there's a Rashi a week ago, 2 weeks ago, Shalotia, it says, Ashanochi Metzavcha Hayom, Shalotia Kid Yudgama Hishana. You shouldn't treat it like an old document. She'ein adam sovlo. Nobody likes stuff that has become dated. Elo kidyutkim chadosh shakaron tziklosa. You need to treat Torah as if it's new. But it can't be a game. I mean, you're telling me that you can't change one iota, and you're telling me that that's a problem because if you change, you're not changing anything, and yet you have to treat it as if it was brand new. How's that? Another instance where you find, it says, Rabbi Loza, it says, when he was teaching Kabbalah, would teach ideas that no ear had ever heard it before. In other words, you can't get more new than that. So there's an aspect in Torah of exactly as it was, immutable, and then there's an idea of ever-flowing and ever-rejuvenating. How? Then he brings another example. A prophet is not allowed to give any new mitzvahs. In other words, the Torah has been sealed at Sinai, or at the end of the years in the Midbar, and that's it. There are no more new mitzvahs. Ubechol zois kol oifna limud dafka al derech chiddush. When we ask somebody, you've been learning, yes. Tell me a chiddush. So how does that? On the one hand, even a prophet can't be mechari something, and yet we're supposed to have chiddushim. So he's pointing out 2-3 areas in Torah itself that seem to carry this contradiction. So he brings a Rashi which will resolve it. Va'ayin besuka behod the kli machzik bracha the isa shom. It says da va'acha im shomoa tishma im tishma beyoshen tishma bechodesh. If you will hear what was, you'll hear what will be. Which the words don't quite make sense. And Rashi explains, "Im ata shomea biyoshen." What does that mean? Mechaze al Talmudcha sheshamato. If you repeat and you chazer what you've learned, tishma bechadosh, tischakim bo lehavin dvarim chadoshim. You're going to understand new things mitoch dvarim yeshanim, from within. in the old things. In other words, the process, just like, let's give an example, sort of in human terms. When a person, when human beings give birth to a child, the child is a new being who really was drawn out of the old material. We have the sense of both. We know this is that no, every human being is new, and there hasn't been another person like him or her, and yet it's all something that was latent in the possible combinations of the different genetic material that was there. So the idea is we don't start with the new, we start with the old, and within the old, there's the ability to bring out the new. So if somebody, in yeshiva parlance, when you say that somebody is darshaning, saying a drasha, sometimes there's a pejorative tone to it. And it kind of means that the person is saying ideas, but those ideas are not really what it means. And there's a catchword along the lines of what's the difference between Musar, which is considered positive, and Drush, which has that pejorative meaning in that context. One seeks to put into the Pasuk, and one seeks to draw out of the Pasuk. One starts with my idea, and I need to find a convenient Pasuk to stuff it into. And one starts with working on a Pasuk again and again until I begin to get a sense of the fine points in it. It's like when a person has an idea, if you linger on it and you sort of mull over it and you think it through and you chew it up, you begin to see a lot of things that had been contained within the idea. So the Pasuk, so Rashi says that if you'll be choza al talmudcha sheshamata, if you'll keep repeating that which you have learned, tischakim b'lov dvarim chadoshim mitol dvarim yeshanim, you're going to be able to come up with the new that from within the old. Hooray. So he's recapping Rashi. Kol ha'esik b'yoshin. We start by working with the old. Avalaskula b'yoshin. What's locked into, what's especially locked into the old, so everything in the same Torah that's been around for so many thousands of years, going through it again and again, paying attention to it, is going to give us new ideas. The new is going to sprout from the old. In that way, it's genuine, and yet it has itself that freshness of newness. Vehine says, Atika kosha mecharata. The Gemara says it's much harder to review old material than to learn new things. Anybody who's been teaching or been sitting in a classroom knows that there's very, very little interest in going over old material, getting people to review lessons, and unless the severe threats of a test or something like that, it doesn't go well. And new things, there is some interest. But you won't find something that's new and genuine unless it's through the pathway of the old. So he explains that the way in which we're going to find something new is going to be content in the old. It's not going to be a different thing. It's going to be more content in that which was there before. Last paragraph. Ukimo babriya shekol ziva ola miskale bischatzei miyom estafka. In the bria itself, in creation, it's one of the things that actually I noticed in the States, at the Conference of Israel, because you have so many seasons in the States, many more you notice things. You notice spring a lot. You notice fall. You even though the same beautiful flowers and trees have been there all year, there's no sense of it unless there's a change, unless something happened. So he says, "Kimo behabriya, shekol ziva olam mizgala bischatriyam zdafka." The beauty of the world becomes it touches you only when there's been something new. Kain b'torah, shekol hanoam mizgala bischatris bodafka. The pleasure, the sweetness, the beauty of Torah presents itself only when you have that moment of something new. Ube'emes rav hamerchak bein hamischadish b'Torah mishachai b'dashikra. There's a huge gap between a person that fulfills Torah mitzvahs by rote to someone that does it with a constant sense of freshness. Ein kol sofen shtevs b'neihem. There's almost no common denominator. One person is going through motions. One person is having a religious experience. Zeshe is chachus biyodo, the one who's found the new, margish es hatam v'semes b'Torah, feels that flavor and feels that truth of Torah. V'zeshe ein lo chidush, and the one who's doing it by rote, by habit, by training, Omed nival mulo, he stands astonished. Veina maven l'ruach hakadosh. Just understand the other person. What are you so excited about? The same thing we've been doing always. Ko gadol kocho sheis chashas ba'olam haTorah. That is the power of renewal and novelty, both in the world around and in Torah. Now we'll skip the page that we just turned in Chaf Beis. Okay, one more point, and then we'll. Vigami says, if you take a look, this is true of tshuva as well. Vigam yesoda tshuva yeschachos. Tshuva also has to come like that. He brings a Gemara Menachos. Loma nivra ha'olam behei. It says the world was created with the letter hey. It has many Kabbalistic overtones. The simplest explanation is it's an easy letter. An easy letter meaning the minimal amount of sound that I make when I breathe is a haze type of sound. Anything else requires some effort, so to speak. I need to put my tongue, my lips, my palate into place. And the hey is just breathing. And HaKadosh Baruch, who's creation of the world, was with the same ease, so to speak. But the Gemara gives another reason why. Mashal achsadra, shekol haroitze lotzes yetze. The hay has a big open, the bottom of the hay is open. In other words, if you don't hang on, you will fall through. We have freedom of choice, which means the freedom to bottom out, literally. V'loma tolu yukare, why is the foot hanging? Why isn't like a ches where the foot is attached to the top? Shim yirtze leil ya'ayil v'leil b'ha. Yael. Because there's an opening to come back. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'leil b'ha. I mean, it's a pretty big opening, the bottom of the hay. Why don't you climb back up on through that hay? So the Gemara says, lo yistaya milsa. It doesn't work. You can't go back the same way you left. The Hainu, the Loima Abola Tamis Hainu Yisai. Mi Blili Kones Ata Letzim Inyin. Without going into the details and explaining that Chazal in its full detail, he wants to just take a point out of it. Harei Kolechot Margish Umevin Mao Yitzir Moilam. We all understand what that means to spiral out. Kimrak Tzas Yisroikin. All it takes is a slowing down, and things spiral out of control. We feel we've sort of gone out of that world. And then it's a hard climb back up. I'm going to skip a line. How do you go back? The road that you left doesn't allow you back in again. We can't. A road that you've gone and you've failed on is not going to be the road to go back. Rak b'derech chadosha levlikanes kloyma rak b'chidush. In other words, if we're to try to understand the main point of this chazal about the world being a hay, it's going to tell us, A, that it requires effort to stay inside. In other words, if the bottom is missing, you need to be holding on all the time. Two, once you exhaust one way, and this way hasn't worked, rehashing it a second time is not going to work. There's going to have to be a new opening, a new approach, something new. So basically, until now, he's spoken about the world in general, the tension between that which is and was and renewal. He spoke about Torah with different aspects, and he spoke about Tshuva. Now we're going to skip to the next page, to the second Maimer, Maimer Sheni. It's page Chaf Gimel. Okay, now he's going to try to explain a little bit what do we mean by new? And we can talk about being re-inspired, but that's something that's usually it needs someone else. What does it mean to do mitzvahs in a way that there's something new constantly? And he's going to give a fascinating insight, which is possibly not what we expected. Atika kosher mechadatas. I saw the first paragraph of that next maimer. Zuya koshe hagadol b'chayim. That's the great difficulty, is that the repeat is more difficult than the new. Kol adam ashebo b'yomim yoisa. As a person gets older, yoisa mistara'as hashigra al chayav b'tor v'mitzvahs. Habit really takes hold of everything you do. When a person is young, he's a teenager, there's always new things and exciting things. Hopefully, at some point, you stop being a teenager. And part of the downside of stability and normal life and is routine and being less than inspired. It's the flip side of stability. So it's a problem. We don't hear the newness in it. And we don't feel that we're becoming renewed. But on the other hand, this is really, we're supposed to be moving forward. So how do we manage within a stable structure that is pretty much what it is, not to be able to find something new? Let's see, even on a practical level, you know, when a person is young, there are really gaping holes in, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, he does that. And a person makes efforts and he changes and so on. But at some point, the change will be slight. We're hopefully all pretty much doing what we're supposed to do. And we can always do more. We're not going to change radically once we're older. So where is that element of chiddush going to come in? So he quotes a Gemara in Chagiga. Issa b'shili Chagiga. And this Gemara really is sort of the linchpin for the point that he's trying to make. It says in the Gemara in Chagiga, Poshe Yisrael Shemaleya Mitzvahs Kerimo. It says, you know, even the sinners in Klal Yisrael are as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate is full of seeds. Dichsiv, it says, Kefela Chariman Rakosech, it's a pasuk in Shashirim. The word reka is sort of a play on the word rakosech reka, meaning even the empty people in Klal Yisrael, the people who don't have much mitzvahs, are full of mitzvahs like a rima. So he says, I always wondered, If the empty people in Klal Yisrael are full of mitzvahs like a rimon, how much more can you add? He says, when you open up a pomegranate, the seeds explode all over the place. There's not much, you couldn't inject many more seeds. So Chazal are using as a metaphor that even the empty people in Klal Yisrael are full of mitzvahs like the seeds and pomegranate. So how do we describe the people that have a lot of mitzvahs, are full of mitzvahs? In that, using that same metaphor, where's there room to pack any more seeds in? What's the pshat? says it has to be. Ki a havdol bin rekonim aleim ainu bekamus hamitzvus elo bechusam. So he says, the point of this chazal is, don't measure the difference between the worthy and the unworthy by how many mitzvahs you have, but rather by the quality, and we'll see in a second what in particular. In other words, the measurement is a measurement. That's what Chazal are telling us. A pomegranate is full of seeds. Those seeds take up the entire pomegranate. The difference between a pomegranate that's worthy and not worthy is not going to be in the amount of seeds, but in a certain aspect of the quality. So he says the full gamer contrast avol hemelayan mitzvos kalos. They're full of lightweight mitzvahs. And he's coming from someplace. He's using this term. But I want to stop a second and just contemplate that term. In Parashas Kisetze, the Medrash goes on and on and on about how one is not allowed to consider any mitzvah, chas v'shalom, lightweight. It says the Torah did not tell us the positive schar for doing mitzvahs, because we didn't want people to get a sense that they might be light or heavy mitzvahs. They're all God's commandments. They're all vitally important. And therefore, we're supposed to do it all. The Medrash discuss it at great length, and so on. So what does it mean, mitzvah kalos? And yet, the Medrash itself uses the term mitzvah kalos, an easy mitzvah. It says that the reason why the Torah told us you're going to live long, both by Kan Tzipor and by Kibud Av Va'em, because we wanted to pick a light mitzvah and a heavy mitzvah. In what sense is a light mitzvah? Where do we get a lightweight mitzvah from? So he brings the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Avodah Zarah, Gimel Man Aleph Mevuah. It's on the same page on Chof Gimel, and it's just one paragraph for the end. Kisuka hi mitzvah kala. It says the Goyim will come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they're going to demand a chance to keep mitzvahs. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, okay, try sukkah. So he says, why is he giving sukkah? Because it's a mitzvah kala. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, I'll give you a light mitzvah sukkah. So he says, why is it light? So the Gemara says, Mipnei she'ein bo chisaron kis. A sukkah doesn't cost much. That was before they gave hechsherim on sukkahs and sold them for a lot of money. As far as the Torah tells us, the psukim tell us, a sukkah, you go out into the field, whatever's left over from the harvest, that becomes your sukkah. The schach is what's left over, the walls are what's left over. Really, a natural sukkah should not cost anything. It's whatever's left over from your harvest. It's called a mitzvah kala because it doesn't cost any money. So he says, "Umizeh hakdorsh mitzvah kalas she'ein le'odom nisoyon basiyosam." If it's not difficult for the person to move it, if it's not difficult for the person to do it, that's called light. Kalus hamitzvah nimdedes bazeh she'ein le'odom kesef onisoyin acha. So just like when we speak of, if I lift up something, I say, oh, this is very light. What I mean is, it doesn't take much effort from my part. It's not very taxing. As opposed to something which is heavy, which is very taxing, takes a lot of effort and a lot of work on my part to move it. So we have a new description of a quality of a mitzvah, and that's light versus heavy, and it means easy versus difficult. Al pi agdara zu, so he says, shal mitzvah kala. So when it says it doesn't cost money, it means this simply doesn't require any expenditure of effort. And so money is just a very central way of saying it. Anything that costs money meant I had to work to earn the money to buy. But the point is, does it take effort, or is it something that can be done effortlessly? Al pi agdara zu shel mitzvah kala, Yizbay Maim Chazal Nalkim Uchayma. Using that definition of a mitzvah kala gives us a very clear understanding, explanation of that chazal about Rishoyim being full of mitzvahs like a rimo. Gamposh Yisroel Mlei Mitzvahs Kirimo. Even the unworthy of Klal Yisroel are full of mitzvahs like a rimo. It's not how many mitzvahs, they come in tons of mitzvahs. But the mitzvahs kalas, they're light mitzvahs, mitzvahs that demanded nothing of them. Omnam Oysen mitzvahs, they do mitzvahs. Avrak mitzvahs She'ein Yisroel B'Kiyuma. But mitzvahs that the person has no problem keeping them. Ve'ein Bazestira. So it's no contradiction. They're Malayim mitzvahs kalas. They're full of mitzvahs, light mitzvahs. Or bekolzim rekonishavah. They're empty in the sense that they have a lot of items, but if you put it on a scale, it weighs close to zero. Now, the final page. Vitana de Messiah. And he says, he brings an incredible chazal that addresses this. Isa b'chazal. It says, Horishoyim mishamalim schar mitzvahs kalis she'osu bolom hazeh k'di letordim min ha'olam haba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays back Rishoyim for the mitzvahs kalos, for the light mitzvahs in this world. And he does not give them the schar in the world to come. So we have a whole a definition of Rishoyim here, which is very different than what we expected. Gam Rishoyim is a mitzvah. They do mitzvahs. But mitzvahs kalas like mitzvahs. Mitzvahs that have, that test a person, or that cost him effort, time, money, einam oisim, they don't do. And he explains, schar mitzvahs kalas elu efshel l'shalom b'olam hazeh. You can pay these mitzvahs in this world. Ki mitzvahs elo ein chorgas min ha-teva. It's an extraordinary insight. I want to spend a minute or two to talk about it. Once upon a time, our understanding of the world, science, Aristotelian science, was that things naturally are at rest and they require something to keep them moving. That was, it seems very intuitive. That some should move, need some to move it. As we advanced, we realized that's not correct. And it was reformulated that anything at rest stays at rest. Anything that's moving with uniform motion will stay that way, barring something stopping it or whatever. What needs input is acceleration. In other words, the natural order of things is they stay as they stay, even if they're moving. That's an incredible, it's you know, for a child, you know, we also go through that, it sounds counterintuitive, and yet we today know it's true. It's the same thing as true in Ruchnius. Mitzvahs cannot be paid in this world because they're not part of this world. So when a person is hungry, and somebody next to him is hungry, and he takes some food of his and gives it to the other person, that deed is not natural. And therefore, it has no schar over here. A person has a tremendous yitzhar to do something and restrains himself because it's wrong. That act is above nature. It's not natural, and there cannot be schar for that in this world because it's not part of this world. But somebody who grew up, for instance, eating kosher all his life and happens to pass by a store that's selling not kosher and it's revolting to look at it. How much is that acceleration or is that natural motion? We would unfortunately have to conclude this is a uniform motion. Yes, it's not natural, but this is something he's been going with all his life. So it is possible to pay a mitzvah kala in this world because it's natural. The things that we grow up and don't require any effort on our part to do something is part and parcel of this world. I remember many, many years ago in yeshiva, we had a group of of four of us, five of us, we would get together once every 2 or 3 weeks, and we would try to think of, you know, Kabbalists to make things that we would undertake to do, and so on, a musavat. And one day was before Rosh Hashanah, and I don't remember exactly the theme that we had decided we'd work on, but one of the boys had a grandmother who was not an easy person, and there was a lot of contentiousness, there would be all sorts of issues, and he said he thinks this Rosh Hashanah he's going to try to defuse the situation, to have a pleasant relationship with her, not to have a contentious relationship. So another friend of mine, with a little bit of a sharp-witted guy, he says, you know what, that's a great idea. I'll also undertake not to have a contentious relationship with her. I'll undertake not to get into fights with her. That's meaningless. It's not, you know, it doesn't say anything. Anything which is continues as it was is part of this world. Even if you had to accelerate to get to that speed, but once you're at that speed and it's constant, that's not so. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can pay those mitzvahs in this world, because they're really, it's natural for a person who's brought up in a certain way and it's been positively reinforced most of his life to just continue that way. But he says, they're not aberrations from the natural order of things. Something that requires effort and loss, again, money, time, anything. A person needs to rise above his natural instincts. It calls on him something to pull himself up. Misgaber al atzmoi, he has to overcome himself. Mitzvah kazui efshel l'shalom gmulam hazeh. That type of mitzvah has no reward in this world. There's nothing in this world that deals with something that is beyond this world. Ach mitzvah kala hi mitzvah shadam oisasa nishav tachtivai. A mitzvah kala means you stayed within the framework of your nature, whether it's the instincts you're born with, or whether it's just the pattern of behavior you've been raised with. You can pay back with that. Hamilu hamiti masigim dafgal de mitzvah shekiyumon mehava nisoyen ladam. The way in which that pomegranate gets filled with real content, with not just empty volume, but with real mass, is mitzvahs that are difficult. Baze adam misrachev, a person becomes bigger through it. Ki misal al tiva, because he had to rise above himself. And there's a point of being beyond nature. Who chai beruchnias, he becomes a spiritual person. Zehu adam mali, that's a full person. I let's see one more piece, and then we'll talk a few minutes about it. Vizui kavanas hatora lavieno de miluze. The purpose of Torah is to fill us with this type of content. That we don't remain within how we were brought up, what we're born with, and that's it. Spiritual life means doing things that your natural emotions and culture and everything that's pre-programmed is not dictating. Something that you need to rise above. He brings a pasuk in a Rashi here. It says, "Hein am kilovi yokum v'kariyus naso." Klaiso is a nation that rises up like a lion. It says like a cub. It comes and it rises like a lion. Rashi. Kshem oinde mishnason. When they wake up, shachris he misgavim kari v'chalavi. They have to push themselves like a lion. Lachdavos mitzvahs, to grab mitzvahs. Lilbush tzitzis, put on tzitzis, likur shma l'nir tefillin. In other words, getting up in the morning is not always easy. And our first order in the morning is to do something that takes an effort. I want to tell you a story that I read recently that was very inspired. It's been published a lot, obviously. Rav Eliashiv passed away a year something ago, and Rav Eliashiv was an extremely structured person. Everything about him is his thinking, his Seder Hayom, everything very, very rigorously structured. And they described his morning. So he would always go to sleep about 10 o'clock at night and would wake up 5 minutes to 2, and by 2:05 he was sitting and learning until the morning, then go to Shacharis, and that was his day. He slept 4 hours a night. Very, very organized, very structured. But his grandson described that after his wife passed away, he had a grandson that was with him and would take care of him. He said he would wake up at 5 to 2. He would throw the blanket off the bed and run, wash his hands, and put cold water on his face. He did this when he was mid-90s. It obviously wasn't easy. Obviously, even if you've done it for 90 years, getting up after 4 hours of sleep is not easy. He actually never showed tired. I mean, you know, I still remember, you can ask him Shilas, he was always alert and always, you never see him nodding off. But he was very, very, but the fact that he needed to do that after so many years meant it still wasn't easy. It still wasn't something that was all, because it is hard. It's just very hard. And to me, that was kind of, on the one hand, it's something you look up to, but you say, you know, he also had to struggle with what he had to struggle with. He didn't have to struggle to get up 7 in the morning, but he had to struggle to get up 2 in the morning. Just different what time you struggle. Some people struggle at 6, some people, 8:39 is a challenge. It depends just on the what your pressures are. But at any rate, the need, Klal Yisrael's jump, our first mitzvah, it takes effort. And therefore it's Klal Yisrael is like a lion, it says, that there will always be misgabah. Next paragraph. Zui Torah ve'elhin ha-mitzvahs shalanu. This is Torah, and that's what mitzvahs are about. U'me'ata novin ki dafke ha-mitzvahs ha-chamuros. It's only the difficult mitzvahs. O dafke mitzvah she-kiyuman kasha b'nisoyne b'skabrus. The mitzvahs that have obstacles in the way, they have the skula to bring us to higher madregas of ruchnius and so on. I want to talk about this outside a little bit and discuss, I guess, the practical implication of it. We're not supposed to look for things that are too difficult to do. We're not supposed to ask for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to test us. That's not Chas V'Shalom. A person is not supposed to take those chances. And given the choice, a person is supposed to is not supposed to put himself into a situation where he might fail. But the flip side of it is as follows. We get presented, many of us, with mitzvahs that have difficulties. And it's one thing when you're young, it's another thing when you get older. You feel frustrated that your progress is slow, and that this particular thing is irksome. We get a sense, if we're used to jogging at 5 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour or whatever it is, a road that's causing us to go 1 mile an hour because of the slope or because of the obstacles, we sort of instinctively feel that we're doing less than we ought to. We feel frustrated. And the truth is, it's the other way around. If we're dealing with a person, anyone who's grown up in a good derech of Torah and so on, does favors, does chesed, and usually you reach a point where there's a very positive response. You do nice things, people do back nice things, it's a nice world. Every so often there's a person that's not easy to deal with. I don't know if even if you do favors for him, or especially if you do favors for him or her, it doesn't make a difference. That person is difficult. And you say to yourself, well, why did I get stuck with that person? I mean, it's frustrating. We don't like, we wherever we are, we want to be comfortable. It's part of, you know, there's a time in life when you want to conquer the world, when you want to do great things. There's a time in life when we want things. Okay, at this age, I shouldn't have to be struggling with it. And every person knows what exactly is the issue that are most difficult for him. He brings here, and he's speaking, again, bear in mind he's speaking to Yeshiva Bachrim, so the last two or three lines goes as follows. We, having been Yeshiva Bachrim and being educators, we understand that for most boys, the toughest battle is sitting down and learning. It's, a young boy is full of energy and life and wants to run all over the place, and to get it to buckle down for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, it's very difficult. It's challenging. And they will look for every mitzvah under the sun. There's no limit to how much chesed they're willing to do, just not to have to go to school. They will build all the sukkahs in town just to be able to take a day or two off. And that's why the focus is, since the spiritual activity that's difficult for you, The one that's challenging is learning, that's where we need to make the effort. That's for a young boy. That's what he talks about because he's speaking to that. But for us, the whole gamut of being, everything that comes to us that's not easy for us. For some people, learning is easy and enjoyable. For some people, it's difficult. And it's one thing when you're 16 and someone tells you, you try a little harder and you'll see it'll go. And it's one thing when you're 60. It's true with every single... Everyone has his challenges. At least, if we understand that this is what fills us with content, that the areas, a mitzvah that took effort, is the one that has real substance to it, that changes the entire, it makes it, at least we understand what we gain by working by it. If the only yardstick we have for measuring our progress is the distance we covered, then a road that's uphill and rocky is really a net accomplishment of very little. But if we have a very different yardstick for accomplishment, it's the difficulty. Then we've worked up a good sweat and a lot of attention. Maybe that's a lot more, giving us a lot more body than something we could have breezed through. I remember I had a Rebbe, it was actually the summer I met him, his name was Rebbe Ruchem Gerelik. Some of you might have heard of him, some not. He was a Rosh Hashiva in YU for many years. He was extremely sharp-witted, acerbic, I'm sure you probably have tasted some of his, been at the end of his wit if you... He was once giving us a very good mashal for this, and he said the following. He had some sort of heart condition that he needed to work out in a gym. So I don't know if the story as such is true, but it was a great mashal. He said, "No, I come in," and the man, he had like sort of a lisp. The man says, "No, Rabbi, 50 times bend over and touch your toes with your hands." He says, once, twice, three times. He said, "Nah, this is not good. He says to himself, "You're Yeshiva Bacher, use your head a little bit." He said, "Obviously, the health benefits are from your thumbs touching your toes." So he sat down and grabbed his toes with his thumbs, and triumphant, he's getting all the health benefits without doing the hard work. It was a mashal, like, It's not the end of doing the mitzvah, is the form. That's sort of the shell. What changes you and fills you with content is the substance. How much sweat did you work up when you did the mitzvah? How much pushing did you have to do? That builds the muscles. So if we're taking a look and taking stock around, it's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur time. So obviously there are holes, there are things we need to do that we don't do, there are things we need to stop that we do. Those, that's one area, and I think we're all sensitive to that. There's another area when you take a look at the scope of life. We all want to be good people. We all want to do good things. And there are areas where HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to throw us real curveballs. A person would like to be kibud av aim, And he may have parents that are at a difficult stage in life or just not easy people. And it's frustrating no matter how much he does. And why I keep doing and I just keep slipping on it. It's just not getting much traction. Every step forward is two steps back. For another person, it might be making a minion on time, or it might be, for another person, it's learning. For another person, it's dealing even tempered with people that get on your nerves. There are a lot of those mitzvahs out there that each and every one has their own tests. The difference between difficult and frustrating is worlds. None of us, I believe, here shirk difficult work. We all dread frustrating work. Because frustrating work is there's no sense of accomplishment. The Gemara says you're not allowed to, it's a pasuk, and the Gemara dashes, you're not allowed to work a slave, even if a knaini, you can't work, you can't work with avodas perech. Avodas perech literally means difficult work, but in Chazal it says it's not avodas perech, it doesn't mean difficult, it means useless work. There is nothing as difficult as something has no purpose. So when we look at the gamut of mitzvahs and the sionos of averis that we have, and when we look at those that are especially difficult, we can at least understand that this separates the rasha, the unworthy, from the person that's a tzaddik. In this sense, there are people that have bags full of mitzvahs, but those mitzvahs are lightweight. Lightweight in the sense not that the mitzvah is not important, but how much did it take from your part, on your part to do it? I want to finish with a story about Reb Aaron Cutler. I think is most appropriate. Reb Aaron Cutler was an extraordinary genius. He was off the charts, very, very quick. His mind was phenomenal. He once saw somebody learning and struggling very hard with simple pshat. And Reb Aaron was moved to tears, and he said, the yegiyas ha-Torah that this person has, the effort that he can expend, that he's expending, I'll never be able to do. And it's something that I don't have. There's a spiritual side to that. That because I have such an easy head, and then he used it. It wasn't as if he didn't coast, he didn't sit back. But still, there's a difficulty. It's climbing up a cliff when you can't make out simple words, a simple pshat. And understanding a great mind who was one of the great Torah minds of the last generation, understanding the quality of someone that every single thing that he did took so much sweat, and having a tinge of jealousy for that. That's a different perspective. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us. We should have a year with all good, and especially ruchnius, and we should learn to appreciate those mitzvahs that are building us and giving real substance and filling the weight of those seeds in that rima. A good job.